And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, sports fans. Today is Thursday, December 29th. The new year is almost upon us. This is episode number 22. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here tonight with just Darren because Kevin is a little under the weather. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us posts, thoughts, questions. Tonight, sports is in fifth gear right now. We got a lot going on. We're on the cusp of the NFL playoffs. We got 2 weeks left. College football winding down. College basketball starting to roll. NHL and NBA in full swing. MLB offseason is winding down. We only got 46 days to spring training. That's right, 46 days to spring training. Darren, how are you tonight?
Doing good, my friend. Doing good. Missing Kev, but you and I will do the best we can to educate people on what we think we know, anyway.
All right. We're going to get right into some NFL. We'll go right into the Jets. Kev would want it that way anyway. Jets took a bad loss last week, 18-3 to Jacksonville. They moved to 7-8. They're now a full game out of the playoffs. It was bad weather. Zach Wilson was awful. They've probably blown the playoff chance, but we'll see what happens. Anything got on the Jets, Darren?
Well, this is probably the worst game that they played all year, okay? First drive, Jacksonville comes out. They get the sack, force the turnover. They can't move the ball more than 3 feet and kick the field goal. Go up 3-0. Don't score the rest of the way, okay? Jacksonville, I mean, the defense statistically is not going to look awful. Only give up 19. A lot of bend but not break. But it seemed like Jacksonville could do what they wanted in between the 20s anyway. Every time they needed to extend the drive, they did, with the exception of the 96-yard drive, which was a backbreaker. It was so awful that the Jets went to Streveler as their backup quarterback when they pulled Wilson. Now, nothing against Streveler because he's a nice player. I mean, as a runner and stuff, but he's got no arm. He can't throw. He was in there for a package to scramble, to run around a little bit. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, he couldn't throw. They were behind. So using him was kind of like not as successful as it should have been, so to speak. But at the same time, you know, if he could, if he had any arm, they would have scored a touchdown because he had Uzama wide open. He underthrew him. Uzama had to come back and dive for one. That would have been a touchdown. Instead, it was like a 20-yard gain. The thing is, they were able to move the ball with Streveler a little bit. They weren't able to score because they were already out of the game at that point. Zach Wilson, have we seen his last start as a Jet? Probably. Weird to say that after 2 years, but you know what? I think we have, and with all the free agent quarterbacks that are going to be on the move next year, you could make the case that he will no longer be a Jet. He's already going to not dress this week. It's going to be Mike White starting with Flacco as the backup. So, you know, anything goes here. They only gave up the one touchdown, but there was too many conversions on D. Mike White's got a two-game audition to see if he's going to be have a shot to be the quarterback next year. The interesting thing is the AFC has been so topsy-turvy that the Jets still, not completely, but kind of control their own destiny. If they win their last two and New England loses one, either to Miami or to Buffalo, the Jets will get into the playoffs. And they play Miami in the last one. So, you know, so that's what it comes down to. The other six spots in the AFC are already sewn up here. Well, actually five out of six. You got Jacksonville and Tennessee fighting for one spot, which is you know, kind of ridiculous. And as we speak, Tennessee has just intercepted Dallas, and they pulled inside the 30 with 12 seconds to go and a half down 10-3. So they're making it a game as Dak just threw a pick. But beside that, you know, Jets, you know, it what looked like a two teams that were on the rise about 4 weeks ago is now like the loser is done this week in the Jets-Seattle matchup.
Yeah. And, you know, they are – listen, I don't think they're one of the worst teams, but they just don't look like they're together when Zach Wilson's at quarterback. They just don't look like they play together as a unit when he's out there. And there are too many times when he drops back and you have no idea what he's doing with the ball. I mean, you don't even get a feel that he has a feel for what's going on sometimes.
Yeah, one of my things about college quarterbacks is I hate it when they just have 1 year where they play good for 1 year, but they hadn't shown anything before that. They generally don't tear it up from that point forward, right? But out of nowhere, He comes up with one monster year, gets drafted second, and you know, he just seems like the game's too fast for him.
Yeah, it does.
It just doesn't seem like he has any pocket presence, and it becomes blatantly obvious.
Yeah. All right. The other New York team, they actually lost also. Minnesota won 27-24. They moved to 12-3. The Giants moved to 8-6-1. Joseph ended the game with a 61-yard field goal as time expired. Daniel Jones was 30 for 42. He threw for 334 yards. Barkley ran for a touchdown. He had 84 yards on the ground. Kirk Cousins threw for three touchdowns. I mean, they are – everybody's going to pick on Minnesota and say they're not good. But, you know, you turn around and Minnesota's got 12 wins. They're playing well. The Giants I'm still not sure. I mean, they are at the moment the sixth seed. They're 8-6-1. They're going to – it looks like they're going to get in despite what may happen the last couple of games. But I'm just not sold that this team can do anything when it comes down to a good team in the playoffs. What do you think, Darren?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The Giants did what the Jets couldn't do a couple of weeks ago. They scored that tying touchdown late. The Jets kept – and it might have been because they were so far out and Barkley just took one to the house from 30 yards. I mean, that might have been the difference. Minnesota wins every game close. You can't punish a team for that. They win them. It's not like they don't find a way to come back. It's not like they don't find a way to be competitive in every game. They are in every game. They went into Buffalo and won. Not easy to do. They got a fumble to do it, but it doesn't matter. They got the win. This week against the Giants, same thing. I mean, the Giants, you know, battled them all the way through. Giants fell behind. They battled back, scored the late touchdown. Giants have no receivers. You know, I mean, Slayton, who I talked about a few weeks ago, they try to replace every freaking year, and every year he becomes the guy. James has come on. Hodgins had a good game. Both kickers hit clutch field goals. I mean, Joseph had a 61-yard. Gano hit two from over 50. So both teams playing well. It was actually the best game Hockenson has played in his career, actually, statistically. But also best game since he's been a Viking. Like, first time you saw him stand out, and you're like, wow, Jefferson, Hockenson, Dalvin Cook. You know, Thielen has fallen off where you don't even know who he is anymore. But Osborne has become a player. You know, there's a lot of different things going on with this Minnesota team that you like. The defense is really a bend but don't break. The Giants, one win and they're in. So if they beat the Colts this week, they make the playoffs. If they lose both games, they probably get in anyway. But at the same time, they're virtually going to get a playoff spot. Now it just comes down to what they're going to be able to do against a good team in the playoffs. And as you've been saying all year, and I've been agreeing with you, if Barkley doesn't have a game, the Giants can't win because Daniel Jones does not lead the team up and down the field just throwing the whole game.
Yeah, and we'll get into in a couple minutes. We'll go through how the playoffs look right now, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get in. But I agree with you, and you know, against a good team in the playoffs, I just don't know what this Giant offense is going to be able to do, because if one of these good teams shuts down Barkley, the Giants are in trouble. I mean, Daniel Jones is not going to run for 150 yards on everybody. And based on his receivers, we're not going to see him throw three touchdowns. So if they shut down Barkley to that extent, there's going to be an issue out there. The Giants are going to have a very difficult time getting the win. Let's head to the AFC. Bills got a win against Chicago. At the moment, they are the number one seed. They beat Chicago 35-13. They controlled the game. They had 426 yards to 209 yards. Chicago really was not a threat to them. At the moment, they're the one seed. Kansas City, who continues to play well, is the two seed. Mahomes was good. They beat Seattle 24-10. They're the 1-2 at the moment, and right behind them in the three is Cincinnati. And Cincinnati got a good win against New England. They beat New England 22-18. They moved to 11-4. They were up 22-0 at the half. And then they basically had a scoreless second half. Burrow had a couple of interceptions, but you know, they at the moment they're the three seed, and the way it looks right now, those are your one. That's your 1-2-3, and unless something major changes, that's where the first three places stand. Darren, you have anything on those guys?
Well, yeah. Well, Buffalo struggled first half. They trailed at the half in that game. Then they really kicked it up a notch against Chicago. You know, Chicago can bother you for a little while just because they can run. The quarterback can run. Montgomery's a good back. But when push comes to shove, they don't have a ton of talent. You know, but the Bills, it was probably the best game Josh Allen has played since the injury. So I give him that. And it was cold. Same thing with Mahomes. He didn't play great. He didn't play awful. Like a lot of drops. But Kansas City was never threatened in the Seattle game. The weather, again, it was like 5 degrees or something, but the wind chill was below zero. So, you know, a lot of drop passes. And as Cincinnati goes, they held on for dear life. Rhonde Stevenson, I forget his first name now. I'm forgetting it. Stevenson.
Ramondre.
I threw it off. He fumbled inside the 10. They had a chance to go up for the lead right there. But at the same time, Cincinnati did a lot of things to let New England get back into the game. Cincinnati plays Buffalo this week, probably the game of the year in the AFC right now, because that's going to determine who the one seed is. It's also going to determine if Cincinnati is going to clinch the division or not, because Baltimore can still technically win that that division, and Cincinnati starts the playoffs on the road. Kansas City has Denver, who, you know, just to get to it real quick, Nathaniel Hackett fired first season after 15 games, day after Christmas, didn't even last the season. And what happens when you lose 51-14 on Christmas for the national audience? That's pretty much what happens there. So these three teams, you know, you expect the Chiefs to win, and obviously one of the two are going to win, either Buffalo or Cincinnati on a Monday night. And that's going to determine where the seeding is. And, you know, this, like I said a couple weeks ago, the Cincinnati, Kansas City could be the host team, even though they don't look like the best team in the AFC. It could all go through Kansas City yet again.
Yeah. Yeah. The number four seed, because they're looking at the division winner at the moment, is Jacksonville. They beat the Jets. At the same time, they took over the four seed because Tennessee lost. They lost 19-14 to Houston. The Titans have lost 5 in a row. We know they're playing Dallas right now at the half. They're down 10-6. But the Titans now have blown a 4-game lead. They lost 5 in a row. Came out today, Tannehill's basically done. He's not coming back. Their backup quarterback situation is a mess between Willis, between Dobbs, who's playing tonight. Today's game against Dallas really means nothing, because it doesn't matter what the results are tonight. And it doesn't matter what the results of Jacksonville's game is this week either. Next week, the two of them are going to fight for the number four seed. We'll see what happens. You know, you could get a Derrick Henry 175-yard performance at any point. So if that happens, Jacksonville may be on the losing side. But the way everything has been going, I can't see Tennessee coming back and getting in at this moment. But we'll see what happens. Darren?
A lot of injuries for Tennessee. I mean, obviously, Tannehill's done. They started Dobbs over Waynes because Waynes just isn't ready. Henry not playing tonight. They put Bud Dupree, their best linebacker, best pass rusher, on the injured list, so he can't come back for the game next week. So Tennessee is a lot of uphill battles. The fact of the matter is that Tennessee reminds you of Minnesota. You know, actually, I should say Minnesota this year reminds me of Tennessee in years past. There's not a lot of room for error. They run the ball. They keep the games close. They run it down your throat and they win. They play in a division where they're able to control a couple of teams, but they're able to, you know, rely on simply the running game. And that's not there when the quarterback is no threat. And when Tannehill's not in the game, they don't have a threat to throw the football. It's like you said, it's a 1-game playoff next week, Jacksonville versus Tennessee. I guarantee you that the NFL is praying to God that there's another loser leave town match for next week where they somewhere can see somebody else to sit there and to flex that game for the Sunday night game, because they don't want to show a Tennessee team that has shown nothing. So especially 2 weeks in a row on primetime. So playing for another matchup.
With no star quarterback, by the way.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Jacksonville's a story and it's nice and everything like that. And you know what? The kid looked real good last week against
He looked excellent.
It's just not going to be much of a tune in for a team that's just not that exciting to watch. That's really what it comes down to.
The five seed is Baltimore. We mentioned them before. They had a 17-9 win against Atlanta. They're 10-5. Lamar Jackson's still not back yet. But Huntley managed the game. Baltimore had a total of 184 yards rushing against Atlanta. They're the five seed. They're in the playoffs. I mean, it's one of those things. They're the five. You get a couple of these guys healthy. We'll see what happens with that team. But right now, you know, if Lamar is out and Huntley's got to manage this team, they really need to get rushing yards. They need to get yards on the ground. That's the only way they're going to win. They did this week. They got 184. They won. We'll see what happens. Anything on Baltimore, Darren?
Well, I'm going to do Baltimore and the Chargers at the same time.
Well, that was the next one.
Well, I'm just saying why. I'll tell you why in a sec. You'll hear why. See, Baltimore can still lose the five seed and end up sixth, and the Chargers can move up to the fifth. The key to that is that you will either play Cincinnati, Buffalo, or Kansas City, or you will play Jacksonville most likely. And your odds of winning on the road in Jacksonville have to be far greater than winning in Cincinnati, far greater than winning in Buffalo,
absolutely,
far greater than winning and to be honest, most likely not Kansas City, because Kansas City most likely will be either the one or the two. The winner of the Buffalo-Cincinnati game is going to probably – be either the two or the one. If Buffalo wins, they'll be the one. If Cincinnati wins, they'll be the two, right?
Yeah.
But the loser will most likely fall all the way to the three, right?
Yep.
And you don't want to play Cincinnati at the three. You don't even want to play Buffalo at the three. So the Chargers are going to give everything they have to try to avoid having to go to one of those places. And so are the Ravens. But they're holding out Jackson until he's ready. He's a running quarterback, and if he can't run, he's not as accurate a passer as a lot of these other guys in this great, great conference for throwing. It's a real battle for that five spot.
The Chargers won their ninth game this week against Indianapolis, 20-3. Eckler had two touchdowns, 67 yards on the ground. They are, and we said this weeks ago, and we actually mentioned, look out for the Chargers because here they come, because they got Keenan Allen back. They got Mike Williams back. And all of a sudden, the offense clicks. It's not a mystery why. Those two will open everything up. They spread it out. Herbert can throw the ball. I honestly don't like the way the Charger offensive line is protecting him at the moment. But it's a lot to do with the way what plays they're calling right now, because they want him to throw the ball. He's throwing the ball all over the place. At the moment, they're the six, but you're right. They're really trying to get up to that five, so they're going to not play, you know, the Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati three seed, because they don't want any part of that to start the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, they have to go to a cold weather place at any one of those three, and it's a challenge. And then you look at it the other way, when you talk about the Chargers, Bosa is eligible to come off the IR now. Now they haven't activated him to the roster, but they activated him off IR. If Bosa's healthy enough to play, and all of a sudden the defense is that much better.
Yeah,
and the Chargers are talented, man. I mean, Mike Williams is talented, and Keenan Allen seems like he's been there for 140 years. He's still open every play. Even Everett at the tight end is good. Eckler makes all the plays. I mean, they don't have any weaknesses on the offense outside of the offensive line, which they every year try to address, and every year seems to be a problem. So we'll see what happens there.
Listen, they're a long shot right now in the playoffs, but on this podcast, when we did NFL picks, that was my pick to go to the Super Bowl in the AFC. So
you're not taking it out now.
See what happens. Right now in the seventh seed in the AFC is the Miami Dolphins. They lost They lost a bad game to Green Bay this week, 26-20. Tua threw three interceptions. Now he's out with a concussion. We have no idea what's going to happen with him at the moment. Miami's lost four in a row. 4 weeks ago, we were talking about Miami maybe being the number one or two seed. And now, forget about it. They've fallen way out of that. Green Bay keeps trying to find a way back into the playoffs. We'll talk about them when we get to the NFC in a couple minutes. But right now, Miami is the seventh seed. Right behind them, you have New England, the Jets, and Pittsburgh, all with seven wins. Tennessee's also got seven wins, but they're going to basically play next week's game against Jacksonville for the chance, and the loser's not going to get in based on the other three teams, including Miami in that discussion. Anything on those guys, Darren?
Well, Tua, the thing, and you know, Kevin always, you know, points it out. I'm not as big a Tua guy as other people, and it's not against Tua. I think he's a fine quarterback. He just, you know, and you brought it up 2 weeks ago. You know, if you take away, you know, those outside routes and force him to throw it in the middle of the field, the ball doesn't, I mean, you know, the ball doesn't carry quickly for him.
It doesn't.
You know what? He's precision, he's timing. I mean, the one thing Green Bay didn't do much, which surprised me, is they weren't checking Hill or Waddle off the line. That's what you have to do against Tua. You got to hit, you got to bump these guys on the line and throw off that timing. Now he's got a second concussion of the year, at least two that we know of. There could be more
that we know of
too. And, you know, now you have the people crying that he shouldn't play and ever again or the rest of the year. And, you know, he's going to make that determination with the coaching staff and the medical staff. But, you know, now they go to New England and they're still better than the Pats, but their defense isn't better.
Nope.
And it's going to be interesting to see what Bridgewater can really do. If Bridgewater can lead them, you know, them to the victory this week, they still don't clinch unless the Jets lose as well. So, they need to win this week and then beat the Jets to get in. And if the Jets lose and they win, then they'll be in the playoffs.
Yep.
But, and it's not like the Jets can't lose in Seattle. They certainly can. But you know, they have a lot to work on this week with Bridgewater because they could easily lose this game. They could be a two-way or three-way tie at 8-8, where it all comes down to that last game of the season. I mean, they're still a dangerous seven just because of the two speedsters on the outside.
Absolutely.
But it's still a, you know, it's a tall task. Right now, if you put a gun to my head, I'd say Miami finds a way in, but it's that battle for the seven spot is severe.
And Pittsburgh is the last team in that grouping. They got their seventh win last week. It was a nip and tuck game. They beat the Raiders. The Raiders are done. Carr, we all know the story right now. You want to?
Yeah, he's benched for the last two games, and now he's not even going to be with the team.
Yeah.
He's going to reevaluate. Basically, Carr has probably played his last game as a Raider.
We think so.
You know, and he just signed a three-year deal. I mean, but there's going to be a lot of suitors, right? And we'll talk about this more in the offseason. But you know the Saints need a quarterback. You know the Bucs are probably going to need a quarterback, all right? You know the Jets are going to need a quarterback. I mean, so there are going to be teams out there, and we don't know what the Packers are doing with Rodgers, and you don't know if Atlanta is going to be able to get somebody.
Washington.
I was going to say, there's the next team. Washington certainly needs a quarterback. You know, there are a lot of teams out there that need a little quarterback help, you know, and, you know, Houston, I mean, they might draft one, but they may not.
Plenty of teams out there.
There are a lot of teams that are looking for that free agent that don't want to sit there and trade for a lot or draft somebody and wait 3 years for the guy to be good. And that's really what you're waiting on right now. But Derek Carr will most likely be one of those guys that will be looking for a new home next year.
Yep.
And the Raiders have a less than 1% chance of making the playoffs. Basically, everybody has to lose every game that they play, and there's got to be a tie in there or some sort of weird thing. And they're not going to get there. This game was somewhat reminiscent, not exactly, of course, of the Immaculate Reception on the exact day of it, and the fact that Pittsburgh came down the field and scored late to win the game. You know, the Raiders, like they are in every game, every week they're in every game. They can't seem to put it away in the fourth quarter. Josh McDaniels is going to Stidham, and we'll see what the Auburn product can do.
Okay, NFC. So Philadelphia is still the one seed at 13 wins. They lost to Dallas. Dallas is the fifth seed. Dallas is just basically, unless they can overtake Philadelphia, they are the five seed.
Yep.
They got a good game from Prescott and Lamb last week. Minshew came in for the injured Hurts, was good. Dallas held Philadelphia to only 87 yards rushing. That's big. That's a key. That's a big key because that's a key for what Philadelphia does. When they start running the ball and then they throw some of these passes in, they become dynamic. And if you hold them under 100 yards, you basically keep them in check. We're going to see what happens. Dallas right now is winning. So if they win, they'd be at 12 wins. They're going to put a little pressure on Philly. Philly probably is going to get the – they're probably going to still be the one seed. But you could see them putting some pressure on here. And Philadelphia does not want to rush Jalen Hurts back. They want him to make sure that shoulder is okay. But at the same time, if they were to lose to the Saints this week, it's only a one game difference. We'll see what happens. That's your one and your five right now.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the five being important just because you're going to get to play Tampa most likely or somebody from the NFC South, and you don't have to sit there and play a San Francisco if you fall to the six. So the win by Dallas last week was huge in that respect because it gave them that – it gave them like a two-plus game lead on the Giants.
And so
the Giants can't really catch them. They've clinched the five. What you said about Philly, 100%. I know Hurts is practicing a little bit this week. Again, he's got the shoulder, the throwing shoulder. You know, they have to win one of the next two games to clinch the one seed. They don't need to do a lot. They might have to beat the Giants the last game of the season if they don't win this week.
And Minshew was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he can't run like Hurts, and that's where the rushing numbers go down.
You know that.
He's another guy that's also auditioning for a chance to be a starter next year. Another guy that you look at that can put the ball into play, so to speak. And you know, he's not gonna embarrass you out there.
Yeah.
We
talked about Minnesota and the two seed with 12 wins. The three seed at the moment is San Francisco with 11 wins. They beat Washington 37-20. It's their eighth straight win. Purdy seems to have unlocked Kittle again. Kittle's just on fire right now. He's flying all over the field. He had two touchdowns. He had six receptions for 120 yards and two touchdowns last week. They destroyed Washington. Washington was not in this game at all. That's kind of what scares me as a Washington fan, is that we play teams like this and we're almost uncompetitive in every aspect sometimes. But at the moment, they're the three seed. And this is where I was going to bring up when we were talking about the Giants. The Giants, we'll skip Tampa for a second, but the Giants right now are the sixth seed. The Giants, if the playoffs started now, would play San Francisco the first game of the playoffs. That is a tough task for the Giants because San Francisco is going to load up the line. They're going to hold Barkley down. They're going to force Daniel Jones to do something, and that's probably trouble for the Giants right off the bat. And I was waiting until we got to these seedings to talk about it, but that's exactly the point that you had made before that we were talking about, is that if they're going to play that first round matchup, they're in that sixth seed against the three, and the three is San Francisco. That is a horrible matchup for them.
I mean, San Francisco and Philly are horrible matchups for everybody, right? Now, Minnesota, it doesn't scare you. I mean, Washington was in the game with them. The Giants were in the game with them. Even the Jets out of the conference were in the game with them. The thing about Minnesota is that the only reason why you give them a fighter's chance against either Philly or against, against San Francisco is because the offense can be prolific if they can get the pass protection, right? You look at it and you feel like nobody – like we talked about the Chargers being a sleeper type team that can do some damage in the AFC. I mean, you might like Dallas a little bit, but it took Dallas to lose Hurts in order to be there. There's nobody in the NFC that you feel like can do anything against the one or the three. Any of them can beat the two. I don't think they can beat the one or the three.
I agree.
And when you're looking at that, you're looking at San Francisco, Philly, which is the title game you want. I mean, listen, you're going to root for Washington all the way through and hope they make the playoffs and hope they pull off an upset and all this other fun stuff, and that's great. Push comes to shove, that's the matchup we want to see, because you want to see how Hurts does against that 49er defense and how Purdy does against that Eagle defense. That's really what we need to see. Minnesota wouldn't surprise you because the loosening up of Hockenson last week to go along with Jefferson, to go along with Cook and Madison, and all of a sudden you feel like, wow, Minnesota's got a lot of weapons, and is any one defense going to be able to stop them? You're not going to be able to take away every single weapon, but every other team in that conference, none of the wild cards scare you. And you know, listen, it's been a great year for the Giants. Not trying to take anything away. Dable's done an excellent job. You know, this is the best Daniel Jones has looked at all in any case, ever. Basically, Saquon Barkley's back. He gives you a puncher's chance, much like what you said with Derrick Henry. He can go off, get an 80-yard run. All of a sudden, the game's a little bit different. The problem is that the Giants offensively and defensively just don't physically match up well against these big, strong physical teams like Philly and San Fran.
Yeah. We'll go back now. So the four seed is Tampa Bay.
Well, that division's still wide open. There's still three teams in it.
Right. I mean, right at the moment, they're 7-8, and they are the four seed. Brady had a nice little comeback against the Cardinals last week in overtime. Listen, none of us think they're good, but at the moment, they're 7-8. They're ahead of by one game on Carolina and New Orleans, who's at 6-9. Carolina had a good game last week. They played a really good game against Detroit to get that sixth win. They were up 24-7 at the half. They had 570 total yards on Detroit. Detroit, who everybody was on their little bandwagon with a couple of wins in a row, and they're right back down to earth now. I don't think that they have the capability to win a game in the playoffs, but if they beat the Bucs this week, they're gonna cause some havoc. They're going to cause some havoc.
Now, the Bucs win, they clinch it. Okay. Yep. If the Panthers win, they have the lead with one game to go. So it's really going to come down to this game. Opened as like a 7-point choice, and that was down to 3. I mean, it's really kind of dropped significantly, the spread in this game.
Yep.
Donald has been good. He hasn't been amazing, but he's been good. He hasn't thrown a pick yet. You know, Tampa. Yeah, they came back last week. They came back on, Trace McSorley in Arizona, but they still did it. They find a way to come back all the time. They are a little bit better than every other team in that division, but with talent, you expect them to be a lot better, and they just haven't shown it yet. Tampa Bay, nobody wants to face them in the playoffs while they have no fear of Carolina, just because you never know what Brady can do if his team is able to stay in the game and if they stay motivated. It's going to be interesting. New Orleans has to beat Philly to even have any kind of thought, any kind of prayer. Not saying it can't happen, especially if Minshew plays, but you know, it's a long shot for them. It's going to come down to Tampa and Carolina most likely.
Okay, and then we get to the 7 seed. Washington at the moment is the 7 seed at 7-7-1. They lost this week to San Francisco. The other teams in the running for that 7 seed, Seattle lost to Kansas City. Detroit lost to Carolina. The only one of those teams that had a good win was Green Bay. They moved to 7-8. They're right there on the cusp. I know I don't want to see them in because I want Washington to get in, but Green Bay is right there on the cusp again. We'll see if they have anything that they could come and get a couple of wins here and force these teams to actually play well. Because at the moment, Washington, Seattle, Detroit, they all have a lot of flaws. Not that Green Bay doesn't, but, you know, between Rodgers, between Aaron Jones, there's enough of those Dylan, there's enough players that Green Bay will be feared if they hit that 7 seed. You know, if they hit that 7 seed, they're going to wind up maybe with Minnesota in the first round game. And you know, don't tell me that people aren't going to be picking Green Bay to beat Minnesota. I mean, you could see it. You could see it coming a mile away already. So what do you think? What do you think of the 7th seed, Darren?
Well, here's the thing. Green Bay is a 3.5-point favorite against Minnesota this week at home. I know that the playoff game wouldn't be at home, but it just tells you how evenly matched people think their team is to Minnesota, because they don't always cover. They win, but they don't always cover. You know, Green Bay played a really good game on Christmas. They really did. They looked good. You know, they have a cornerback that can shut down. They can get pass rush. They can run the ball in cold weather. They're physical. They're big. Their wide receivers are starting to come around a little bit. Rodgers has never been great in those big games, but he has won a Super Bowl, so you can't say never. You know, it's you know, it's a very interesting battle for 7. Now Washington plays Cleveland this week. Carson Wentz back as the starting quarterback after a little bit of a struggle the last couple of weeks from Heinicke. There's something about Heinicke I kind of liked. A little surprised at the move, but Rivera, you know, Riverboat Ron, man, he's going with the hot hand.
Yeah.
To him, Wentz let him down for a touchdown. Let's give him a shot this week. listen, watching the two quarterbacks throw and play, Wentz looks like the superior quarterback. Just Heinicke has some X factor to him that you like. He can scramble. He can do this and that and kind of keep his team in it. Detroit had a really brutal loss last week. Now, I actually had Carolina. I thought that they would lose that game because I thought people were too high on them. But
you did.
I liked them a lot last week. But the thing about – well, you can't go by my picks any week, so I got like a lot of teams. It doesn't really freaking matter. But Detroit gets Chicago this week, right? So you figure Detroit wins. Green Bay has to beat Minnesota to keep pace. Washington should be – you know, should win their game against Cleveland. But you don't know. But they should. Cleveland lost at home to the Saints last week. In a blizzard, they were up 10-0. Deshaun Watson has not looked good at all.
No.
Upon his return. So you feel like it's going to come down to the two teams. It's going to come down to Washington and Detroit in week 18. Washington's going to have Dallas, who may or may not be playing for anything. And if they're not playing for anything, you like Washington's chances. You know, and Detroit's going to have... I believe they get Green Bay the last game of the season, if I'm not mistaken. So it's there's a lot. I mean, Seattle's still in the hunt. And they get the Rams last week of the season. So if Seattle wins this week, they're still in the hunt too.
Yep.
So those are the three teams right now. The top, because of the tie, I give Washington the edge. To be honest with you, because none of these teams are good enough to go 2-0, in my opinion. But we'll see what happens. None of the four teams are good enough to go 2-0.
All right, let's move to some college football.
All right. Well, listen, it's been a crazy bowl week. You know, it's just been unbelievable. Yesterday there was kind of, just to put it in perspective, yesterday's Liberty Bowl, the final score was 55-53 between Arkansas and Kansas. Kansas came back and scored 15 points in the last minute to tie it up and send it to overtime. Both teams made their overtime, scored in overtime. Both teams made the two-point conversion in the second overtime, and then Kansas was held short in the third one. Just say that there's been some pretty good bowl games. The thing about the bowls are when you're watching them early on, you're getting a lot of teams you've never watched play all year. So you're kind of going off record and stats against Conference USA and the American Athletic and all these Sun Belt, and you're watching all this stuff, and you don't know what's going on. From this point forward, with the exception of the Arizona Bowl, where Ohio will play Wyoming, and yes, I'm an idiot that's probably seen four Wyoming games, but not everybody does that. You know, you'll know of every team that's playing. It'll be all the Power Five teams and Notre Dame playing from here on out. So it gets them a little bit more exciting. Last night, because we said Holiday Bowl was the game to watch, Holiday Bowl, and it was. Oregon scored late, won by a point, but it wasn't as good as the Liberty Bowl, where it went 55-53. Again, Kev brought it up a couple weeks ago. All the players opting out, all the players in the transfer portal. You don't even know who's going to play necessarily, but it is kind of cool to watch. Last night, Texas Tech played Ole Miss. And the thing about it, and we'll get into the future games in a second, but Texas Tech used to have Mike Leach as their head coach. Ole Miss had Mike Leach as a rival. So what Ole Miss did, which you don't hear about rivals outside of watching the movie We Are Marshall, is they put a little decal for Mike Leach on their helmet. And meanwhile, Texas Tech on the first play of the game lined up in the air raid, Mike Leach's offense, and took a penalty, which Ole Miss declined. I mean, it was just like a tribute to Mike Leach. It was really, really cool because he's probably the coolest, funnest coach that never got a lot of credit for being cool and fun. And he just was. And his coaching tree is amazing. And that's what the bowl games are about. It's going to be interesting this year because the New Year's Day is a Sunday, so it's an NFL day. So there'll be no game on New Year's Day, which is used to be what it used to all be about. This year, all the games will be on the 30th, the 31st, and the 2nd. Like today you had the pinstriping, you have all that other stuff. And we can run through all the other bowls, but really we'll just talk about the big bowls that are coming up.
Okay.
The first of the major the New Year's Six bowls is the Clemson-Tennessee Orange Bowl. Both teams have only two losses. Clemson's a favorite right now. They're playing the second quarterback. Their original starter of the year is already in the transfer portal. Herndon is out already with For the year. And Hyatt opted out for Tennessee. That's their high power players. So already you got two teams. You got a lot of change, a lot of turmoil. Clemson probably has a few more players sticking than Tennessee, but it'll be interesting to see that one. Then you got the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Tulane plays USC. Tulane's a good team. I mean, the reason why you could talk about Tulane a little bit is just because they went into Kansas State and won. So you win a road game at Kansas State, you know, you're a decent team. You're not great, but you're pretty good. And USC has no defense, but their offense can score with anybody. So, you like the way they're playing. Penn State plays Utah and Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. You know, we saw Utah beat USC, and they beat them pretty good. Penn State only has the two losses. They lost to Michigan and Ohio State. Otherwise, they're undefeated. They're really good. Sugar Bowl is Alabama, Kansas State. Alabama, everybody's playing. None of these guys opted out. They all decided to play. So that's probably bad news for Kansas State, who's got, again, this little running back named Deuce Vaughn is about 5'5", who makes a lot of people miss. Quarterback plays well. It's just going to be, you know, a tall task for K-State, but K-State's in the Super Six, but any New Year's Six Bowl. And then you got the two big ones, the playoffs, and these are the ones we really should talk about.
Yeah.
The Fiesta Bowl, which is the 3-seed TCU against the 2-seed, so that's Michigan. So this is a matchup of contrasting teams. Michigan's a great defensive team, great at running the ball. TCU is a great offensive team. Good receivers, also run the ball very well and have a quarterback that does a lot in Max Duggan. That's going to be the key to this matchup. It's going to be, can TCU put up points against the Michigan defense? That's really what it comes down to, because Michigan's offense is not great. They look great against Ohio State. Was it a bad day for Ohio State? Was it a great day for Michigan? Was it a combination of both? We'll never know. That was probably the best the offense looked for Michigan all year against any type of team that they played. This is the same team that needed to escape with a win against Illinois. You know, so, you know, it's not like Michigan is a powerhouse that blew everybody out. They blew out a lot of weak teams. At the same time, TCU had three games in a row where they didn't give up a second half point. So we have a lot of intrigue, a lot of excitement in this matchup. G, what are your thoughts?
I'm actually liking Michigan in this game. I think TCU is probably the weakest of the four teams. They're not playing, you know, elite competition against Michigan. Michigan, to me, is far more talented than TCU. And, you know, looking back, the one game you can point at is that Michigan has a very similar style to Kansas, and Kansas gave TCU all kinds of problems. So, you know, for that,
Kansas State.
And, you know, for that, I'm taking Michigan. I think Michigan's going to win this game. I don't think they're blowing them out. Don't get me wrong. I think it's, you know, maybe 7, maybe 10, you know, but I like Michigan in this game.
See, I think that this game is closer. I think TCU covers. Spread 7.5. I happen to be a guy that likes TCU. I follow TCU. I root for TCU. Back from when Kenneth Davis was their leading rusher, you know, back in the early 80s. I'm not talking about just LaDainian Tomlinson and beyond, but I've liked TCU for a while. Max Duggan is a nice quarterback. He finished 2nd in the Heisman. McCarthy is not a great thrower of the football. He's a better runner. Corum is hurt. It's just going to be – Michigan does have more talent. You got a team that's going to have all the 5-star and 4-star guys against a team with a couple 4-stars and a bunch of 3-stars that has really good skill positions. But if you break down the top, like, 15 players on the field, at least 10 are Michigan's. The best talent is going to be TCU's wide receiver, Quentin Johnson. I brought him up a couple weeks ago. But he's going to be the best talent. But out of the other 14 – at least 10 of those 14 are going to be Michigan's players. So it's going to have to be TCU's defense. And they play an interesting DG. They play a 3-3-5. Okay, so they're not big. And they rely completely on quickness against a big, strong offensive line from Michigan.
Yeah.
But they rely completely on quickness. They don't blitz a ton. They blitz a little bit. But they play a 3-3-5. And that's their standard. They play that nickel the whole game, basically. So they're not going to be very big. They rely on their safeties to come in and make a lot of tackles on this team. Are they going to be able to do that against Michigan. Are they going to be able to tackle him for 2 or 3 yard gains, or are they going to be tackling him 8 yards downfield? That's really what's going to be the key to this entire game. It's going to be the Michigan O-line against the front six of TCU. That's going to determine the entire game. If it's a blowout, it's Michigan's win. TCU can only win, I think, a close game.
So I like Michigan, you like TCU, and the under the weather, Kevin likes TCU as well, plus the points.
The plus 7.5 is the spread.
Yep.
Okay, so that's an interesting game. The other one has the talent, okay? This is the 4 versus the 1. This is Ohio State, who by name and by reputation is a very powerful 4 here in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. And Georgia is the 1. Now, just remember this. Game's the Peach Bowl, Atlanta. Big home field advantage for Georgia, okay? Now, the tickets are allotted a little differently. It's not like they get to own the arena. But there'll be a lot more scalpers coming in there from the University of Georgia than they will be from Ohio State just because of where the game is being played. Ohio State was beaten up by the only other physical team they played, which was Michigan, okay? Was it a bad day? It could have just been a bad day. We don't know because Ohio State, you don't expect them to get beaten up. But they were beaten up by Michigan in that game, particularly in the second half. But they have plenty of firepower. They have C.J. Stroud at quarterback, Marvin Harrison Jr. And Georgia has great offensive talent on their other end as well. The question will be if the Ohio State defense can handle the Georgia offense. You know the Georgia defense will compete with Ohio State's offense. Can Ohio State's defense compete with Georgia's offense? That's going to be the determining factor. It's going to be, was that Michigan game a fluke, or is Georgia just going to be able to run it at will and do whatever they want? It's going to come down to the talent level's even. It's going to really come down to can Georgia control Ohio State's offense? But really, the bigger problem is going to be if Ohio State can control Georgia's offense. Got to remember, Georgia controlled Tennessee's high-powered, Hendon and Hyatt. You know, they kept them on the wraps. They scored under 20 points in that game, and that was the most prolific offensive team in the country this year at the time. G.
So I look back. I like Georgia minus the 6.5 in this game. I look back, and the two things I noticed about Ohio State, and listen, this is not the classic Georgia team. This is not a team that is good as it has been in past years. Don't get me wrong. But the two things that Ohio State seems to struggle with is, on offense, they seem to struggle with teams that have a good defensive front. That's Georgia. And when they are on defense, they seem to struggle with the big passing attack, and that's Georgia again. So I'm taking Georgia minus 6.5. Again, I don't think this is a blowout in any way. I think this is another close game. If we were looking to have two big games, I think we're going to get them. I think we're going to get two close games in here. But I'm taking Georgia, and I can tell you the – under the weather, Kevin also likes Georgia in this game, minus the 6.5. Darren, what is your pick for this game?
I hate to make us all unanimous, but I think Georgia is just a better team right now than Ohio State. I agree with you. I think this is a game. I don't think there's anything ugly about this game at all. The other game has a chance to be a blowout. I don't think this one does. I think Ohio State's got too much firepower. They've had a month to sit there and look at everything that Georgia has to offer. And they have the skill level to keep this one close. If the spread was 7.5, I'd have a harder time with it. But at 6.5, I think Georgia can win by at least a touchdown. But I think they'll win by 10. And this is a game kind of has like, I don't know, 41-31 written on it for me. 41-28, somewhere in that range. While the other one, I'm going to take TCU to squeak out and win 30-27. And what that does, by the way, is gives us a really not so great title game.
Yeah.
If TCU wins, you really want Michigan to win against one of these other two teams. Nothing against TCU. That's the team I'm rooting for. I just don't think that they can play with Georgia. And, I think that Michigan can. So that's just my take.
Any other bowl game remaining over the next, 4 days? Any other bowl game remaining over the next 4 days that you think is a really good game?
You know, there's two that stand out to me. Number one, I'm really looking forward to the ReliaQuest Bowl in Tampa, Mississippi State, Illinois. They're both 8-4. These teams aren't great, but this is going to be the first game without Leach. I'm curious to see how Mississippi State comes out. They all stayed on. Nobody really defected. Everybody was really kind of into it. And I think that's going to be a fun game. Illinois's got a great defense and runs the ball well. That always travels everywhere you go. And Mississippi State's got a lot of athletes, so that's going to be really interesting. The other one I'm really looking forward to, and we touched on a little bit, was that Rose Bowl. I think Penn State-Utah is a fun game. I think Utah has really solidified itself as a pretty good team, and so is Penn State. We're going to find out how good Penn State is when they go up against a Utah team that is physical. It's going to be two physical teams battling each other. I could see that game being much more low scoring than people expect. Those are the two I'm really looking at.
Okay, good. All right. Let's move to a little baseball. There's not a lot to talk about, but a couple of things going on. We saw a couple of more signings. This is like the second tier guys. We saw McCann traded from the Mets to the Orioles. We saw Toronto trading for Varsho. They got rid of Gurriel Jr. and Marino, the 22-year-old catcher in the deal.
I was surprised at that. I thought Toronto gave up more than I expected. But I know that Varsho's a young player too. I get it. But I was a little surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think once they made that trade and got rid of Teoscar Hernandez to Seattle, I think all of a sudden now they're trying to move things around to get another bat back. And I think that's the bat they like. We saw a couple of signings. We saw Conforto sign with San Francisco. We saw.
We said last week that what are the Giants going to do? Well, they went Conforto.
we saw Kimbrel sign with Philadelphia. Eovaldi sign with Texas. We saw Segura sign with the Marlins, and we saw Corey Kluber sign with Boston. The only other thing that's really out there is the medical concerns with the Carlos Correa contract. San Francisco thought enough about it that they basically voided the contract and didn't complete it. The Mets have issues. Now, we don't know if the issues are minor issues or major issues, or at this moment they're just trying to take something out and lower the years. I mean, we'll see what happens. You have any thoughts on Correa, Darren?
Well, I mean, the thing is Cohen can't really opt out of it because he made such a big deal about making this signing.
No, he can't.
He opened his mouth and about how he swooped in and I'm the hero. And I'm not trying to downplay what Cohen's done for the Mets. He's done a ton. I'm not insulting it. But now he could have egg on his face. But obviously the repaired leg for Correa's got some serious issues here.
Yeah.
And you don't know the long-term effects for Carlos Correa. It's hard because they don't tell us exactly what it is, except that they say they have concerns about the leg. So you don't know what it is. What is it, a one-year thing? Is it a year four thing? I had heard year four, year five for San Francisco. I don't know how true and accurate that is,
And the back was the other problem that they had problems with.
Yep, absolutely. And it's so it looked like the Mets were the conquering heroes a week ago, and it still might be. Listen, Carlos Correa still might come here, but is Carlos Correa going to be the Carlos Correa they're paying? Is this going to be Carlos Correa hitting 280 with 30 homers and driving in 90 and scoring 90 runs, or is this going to be Carlos Correa hitting 18 homers, hitting 265, giving you solid defense over a third? And maybe giving you a slight upgrade over Eduardo Escobar for, $26 million a year. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. That's only going to last 4 years, and you're paying him for another 8 years, and you're going to celebrate Carlos Correa Day the same day you celebrate Bobby Bonilla Day over in Queens. So it really is a conundrum for the Mets, I think.
And let me tell you this. So in 2022, Correa was on the injured list 18 days. It was bruised middle finger and COVID. In 21, he was out 7 days of COVID. In 2019, he was out 87 days. And it was for ribs and lower back strain. And in 2018, he was out 43 days with lower back soreness. So it's 130 days that he was out with back soreness and rib issues. And to me, that's the guts of what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean, again, you and I, Yankee fans, grew up with Don Mattingly.
Yeah.
Once the bat goes,
that's it.
Not the same player. Don Mattingly was the best player in baseball for 6 years.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, his career came to a screeching halt because his back fell apart. And that's really what we're going to find out a little bit more about with Correa. It's I wish Kev was on here because he's the Met fan. I mean, you're going into the year with Correa right now as your third baseman. I mean, you just paid him all this money. He's going to play. You just don't know if that back is gonna really, take down his power stats. You just don't know if he's going to be able to hit the same way. It really is a question mark right now.
Yep. All right. That seems to be it with baseball.
And one other move, the Yankees made the move on. They traded Lickie today.
Yep. I saw that to Atlanta.
They got a couple of young prospects. I mean, nobody that was in the top of Atlanta system, but we won't have to. I won't have to look at Lickie anymore, and that's fine with me.
Okay. You got anything in college basketball, Darren?
Well, listen, slow week last week. Not a lot going on. Just a couple of things to note. Conference play really kind of kicking off this week and into this weekend. That's really the key. My top five remain the same: Purdue, UConn, Houston, Arizona, and Virginia. New Mexico still stays undefeated as the other team as well. G, what were you gonna say?
I got coming up on the five. I got Texas.
Texas is good.
Playing really well. I like Texas at the five right now.
I only put Virginia ahead of them because they beat them. But in a head to head, but Texas is playing excellent right now. Houston is real good. They beat Virginia. Win. It's like
Houston had a huge win the other day against Tulsa. It won by 39. I mean, it was just whoo.
Well, Houston again. They play defense, and they're on ball the whole game. They're nasty. They're tough to score against, and that kind of stuff happens, and they give everybody trouble.
Is the Big 12 top conference at this point right now?
On paper, the Big 12 is real good. I'm still going to say the SEC is the top conference,
okay.
Even though Kentucky's not Kentucky. Arkansas and Alabama are real good. And when those two teams are really good, and you had Mississippi State playing relatively well, LSU is resurgent and back. Kentucky is still going to be Kentucky, and Tennessee is the top team and the top dog in the conference. I'll say that the SEC is the lead.
Okay. Moving on to the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
You want to give me some top five?
I'll knock out mine. You tell me yours, and we'll take it from there. My top five: Boston is one. Toronto 2, Carolina 3, Dallas 4, and Vegas 5, with Winnipeg just off of it.
So I got the same five. I moved Carolina up because they are just insanely hot right now.
Eight in a row.
They're 9-0-1 in their last 10. They're 8 in a row. They're on fire. Teams that are on the rise, I mean, Washington is 9-1. The Rangers are 8-2. I moved Winnipeg down a couple of notches. They're 4-6 in their last 10. And the other team that's just falling off right now is the Devils. They're 2-7-1 in their last 10.
They're free falling.
it's a fall right now. Anything else in hockey before we move to a little NBA?
I mean, no, the one thing I'm noticing just with hockey is that, the Rangers Islanders finished their season series last week with the Rangers winning the final one. Just, again, horrible, disgusting. Looking at something next week, because, I root for Calgary. In January, we played the Blues on back-to-back days in St. Louis. Whoever did the schedule this year is weird. We played the Blues in St. Louis on the 10th and on the 12th. And I'm like,
horrible.
What the hell is that? But how can the Islanders Rangers, one of the better rivalries in hockey, not be playing at all in Feb, March, or even April? I mean, it's
horrible.
It's just a bad job by the NHL.
It is. It really is. NBA.
Okay.
So you want to give me your top five, and then we'll talk about a couple of things?
Absolutely. Boston, to me, is the one. Brooklyn is the two.
I agree.
Denver, the three, just ahead of Milwaukee, the four, even though Denver lost last night. And I have New Orleans as the five, with Memphis just off the pace.
I have New Orleans at the five. I have the Clippers at six.
Clippers are right there too. There's a lot of Cleveland's right in that argument. You know, there's a lot of teams that Utah, you know, there's a lot of teams you can mention in that area.
Two big things, two big performances the last couple of nights. Zion last night had 43 against Minnesota. If he plays this way and stays healthy, he's a force to be reckoned with. But
when there's a quote that somebody had, and I'm blanking on who, that said, we're playing basketball and he's playing football.
Yeah.
He's just that much stronger than everybody else right now.
And if we're going to bring up performances, we got to go back a couple of nights and talk about Luka Doncic. 60 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists against the Knicks. They win in overtime, 126-121. He played 47 minutes. He had 60 points. The guy is like a one-man wrecking machine when he's out there. The problem he's going to have is that he does not have a lot of good players on his team, and it's going to be difficult for him to make any noise.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he's a superstar. He's the ultimate swing guy. He can do everything on the court: rebound, pass, shoot. He finds a way to score. He does not look as athletic as he is. 60 points. I mean, it's not easy to do.
No.
The Knicks had him dead to rights. Let him back in the game. It was a bad job by the Knicks to let them back in, but the kid still put up 60. I actually caught part of the Kings Nuggets game last night. Which, you know, is not a household matchup, but Jokic is a superstar, no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely.
But the Kings came back and won that game, and they played the night before in the same arena as well, by the way. And Denver came back on Sacramento, and then last night the other way around. But it was kind of fun to watch the matchup between Sabonis and Jokic. Sabonis playing with a broken hand. He had I think it's his 21st double-double of the season. He had 31 and like 12 and like 5 assists.
Crazy stuff.
Jokic didn't have a double-double, but he had like 7 or 8 rebounds and like 7 assists. I mean, watching big guys that do so much for their team, really kind of fun to watch both of those kind of players. And the Aaron Fox is a really young superstar. You're seeing Malik Monk had 31 last night. I mean, there was a lot of 33 last night. A lot of good players in a game like that. You watch Ja Morant on a nightly basis. You see what he can do. You mentioned Zion. The interesting thing is that LeBron keeps losing. And he's getting upset about how his team is performing and how his legacy is looking. I can't blame him.
Nope.
Just the Lakers. The Lakers have not been able to get it going. And right now they're the second team in L.A.
They are. To be honest. Yep. Only other thing I got is we just need to spend a couple minutes talking about probably the soccer icon. Pelé died today at the age of 82. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about World Cup, when we were debating who the greatest player was. Pelé won 3 World Cups. He won 2 International Cups. He won 2 Copa Libertadores. He won 6 titles in the Brasileiro, and he won a title with the NASL with the Cosmos in 77.
That's a lot. He came out of retirement for that, and the attendance numbers for the Cosmos, I believe, tripled within a month, or quadrupled, something like that, or something amazing that happened. Because people were getting to watch Pelé play here in New York. And that's where the old Cosmos. That all started with this guy. John Sterling, the Yankee announcer, doing the Cosmos games with Pelé and Giorgio Canella. I'm just saying, old-time stuff. The bicycle kick, he basically invented it. Couldn't afford a soccer ball. Had newspaper inside of a sock. That's how he learned how to play. Revolutionized the sport for so many people. 82 years old, you want to find a guy that transcended race and went by one name his entire life. And everybody, you mentioned Pelé, and everybody over the age of 30 knows exactly who he is. Maybe some of the kids don't, but he was a name that for us who barely saw him play, maybe a little bit with the Cosmos, if we saw like a half of something, it was so minuscule how much I saw the guy play. but I know a ton about Pele.
Absolutely.
I probably saw more in the movie Victory with Sylvester Stallone than I saw him on the field. But wow, that bicycle kick and everything he did and brought to the sport, just amazing.
Okay, anything else before we get to some NFL picks?
Just a couple of quick things on the NFL. Ed Reed, you know, we didn't talk much about Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders took Jackson State at an HBCU school and brought them to notoriety. Got a lot of top, recruits going over there. He Jackson State became a household name, much watched TV, was all over ESPN, all that other stuff. Well, he did it for a year, and then he moved to Colorado. So now he's now the head coach in Boulder for the Colorado Buffaloes. Ed Reed has just taken over as the coach of Bethune-Cookman. So I'm just very curious to see what's going to happen. Are the HBCU, teams going to really – colleges, I should say – are they going to really start to get some – major notoriety from former players that really want to go back and support? Now, you got to remember, Deion Sanders went to Florida State. Ed Reed went to Miami. Neither one had anything to do with Jackson State or Bethune-Cookman. But to take these jobs was really interesting, in my opinion. I mean, Deion parlayed into a bigger job. I don't know if Ed's going to do that. He might. We'll see what happens. We talked about Hackett getting let go after 15 games. We talked about Carr. And, again, just something to keep in mind for everybody. You know, Carr – and Garoppolo and Rodgers and a bunch of these guys are going to be out there for people to look at going into next year. Rodgers may not be, but there's a lot of rumor that he might be. So it's going to be interesting to see what the quarterback carousel looks like next year. But pretty much for me, that's it. That's all I had for tonight.
All right, NFL picks week 17. 2 weeks left. That's all we got left. And honestly, it's pretty close. We're not good, but we're close. We've picked 48 games so far this season. I have 23 wins. You have 23 wins. Kev has 20 wins. So it's going to come down to the wire.
I had a 3-0 week. It's the only reason I got back into it.
Together, we are at 46%. It would be great if the three of us combined could get to 50%.
That's how bad we are now. We're trying to get back to 50%.
We have a shot, but we'll see what happens. I'll start us off.
Okay, sure.
My first pick is going to be San Francisco minus 9.5 against the Raiders. Raiders are a mess. Carr's gone. He's not playing again. San Francisco's on a major roll. If they could somehow squeeze, figure out a way to get to the two seed, they want it. Right now, they are only a game behind Minnesota. I'm taking San Francisco minus 9.5 as my first pick. My second pick is going to be the Chargers. Minus 6.5 against the Rams. I think the Chargers are on a run. I think the Chargers are on a roll. I don't know if Bosa's coming back this week, but the offense is starting to click again. And when you got Keenan Allen on one side and Mike Williams on the other, that's plenty of receivers for Justin Herbert to find. I'm taking the Chargers minus 6.5 as my second pick. My third pick, I'm taking Philadelphia.
Okay.
I like that it's under 7. It's minus 6.5 against the Saints. Even with Minshew at quarterback, I think they're going to run the ball enough. The runners got stymied last week against Dallas. Dallas only held them to 84 yards. I don't see that happening 2 weeks in a row. They have enough runners, even without Hurts, between Sanders, between Boston Scott, that they like using these guys all over the place. I'm taking Philadelphia minus 6.5. Now, before you get to your picks, I'm going to give you Kev's picks because we talked to Kev earlier today.
Yep, absolutely.
Kevin likes the Giants minus 5.5 against the Colts. He actually loves the game. It's one of his big games this week. His second game is going to be Cincinnati plus 1. He likes the Bengals to have a good game against the Bills. He thinks that they have a great shot at moving up into the one or the two seed. And Kev's third choice is the Minnesota Vikings. He likes the Vikings minus 3.5.
Plus
3.5 against the Packers, excuse me. He likes them getting the points, even going into Green Bay. He likes them. That's Kev's three picks. Darren, what do you like this week?
Well, I'm gonna go it make you nervous. I like Washington laying 2.5 against the Browns. I just think they're better. I don't think that they're a lot better, but I think they're a field goal better. I think that they'll. Okay. I think it's a close game, but I think Washington wins this game against Cleveland.
I hope you're right.
Cleveland can't cause havoc. Garrett's still having a great year. The defense is pretty good. But when they blew that game last week against the Saints at home, kind of told me what I needed to know. I think Washington's defense is good enough to keep Cleveland under wraps. My second pick is the Jags. I like the Jags laying 4 against the Texans. I think that spread's a little low. I feel like there's something I don't know.
Okay. Because
to me, the Jags are I know the Texans won, but they have 2 wins. I mean, let's not go crazy. I know they played well against Jacksonville. I get it. I just think that the Jags get even with them. I think the Jags can beat them by a touchdown in this game and get that game. And I agree with Kev. I like the Bengals on Monday night. I think the Bengals getting a point at home against the Bills. I think that the Bengals obviously win it outright. I don't think it's going to finish in a tie. I think that it's a real close game, and I think Burrow and Allen duel each other, and I think that Cincinnati knocks Buffalo out of the purchase the one seed.
Okay.
And that's my take.
Picks for week 17 in the books. I got one underdog money line parlay for you.
Okay.
2 underdogs. You could take Carolina to beat the Buccaneers. You could take Minnesota to beat Green Bay. And that's plus 512 on the money line.
For just those 2 teams. And both those games are winnable.
Money line, no points.
That's awesome. I like that one.
That's my money line parlay for the week. Let's hope we have some good luck. And that's it for me, Darren.
I have nothing else. So we're just going to, in closing, just say, hey, listen, hope you've been following us a little bit on Facebook. We put our picks up for the bowls every single day. You know, we're not doing great, but we're not doing awful in the bowl picks. You know, Kev's, I think, going in today was 7 games over 500. I was a little over 500. You were a little under 500. But, you know, it's not easy because you don't know who's playing in these things, but we like to have fun. We'll let you know a little bit of insight if you happen to be a gambler and you want to have an idea of who's playing and who isn't. We'll at least give you that much and why we like a certain team over another. So please, you know, Facebook, we ask you who you like. If you have an opinion on the game, put it out there. Let us know what you think and why. We'd love to hear about it. Let us know everything that you possibly can. Ask us questions. Talk to us about whatever sport it is you want us to cover more or less of. Just give us as much feedback as possible. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino tonight. Kevin's always with us, just not tonight, a little under the weather. And, you know, he was all stuffed up, so you wouldn't be able to hear him clearly. And, you know, that's not good audible listening for you guys. And we could do video, but you don't want to see that either. So we keep it just to the audible side. But you can download our podcast, the Sports Kings from Queens, anywhere you get your podcast, you know, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be you know, tune in, whether it be Spotify, whether it be on Alexa. But, you know, tell people about us, share our stuff, let us know what you like, what you don't like. You know, and, you know, we enjoy doing the show. We hope you enjoy listening to it. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.